Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Today on Life Quest, I'm talking with Adam Hamilton. He's senior pastor of the United Methodist Church of the Resurrection in Leawood, Kansas. He has written a number of books, and the one we are talking with him about today is called Love to Stay, Sex, Grace, and Commitment. Welcome to Life Quest.
Thank you very much, Dwight. It's great to be with you today.
Tell me why you wrote this book at this time.
Well, as a pastor of a congregation, I'm constantly seeing couples who are struggling in their marriages, and you recognize that there are some basic things that if they could master those, if they even knew to do them, might actually make a difference that could increase the satisfaction in their marriage, allow it to function like a marriage is supposed to function. And so that was the precipitating factor in first preaching a series of sermons that the mm-hmm. book is based on and then writing the book. And what we did was a little interesting. We put together a survey that we sent both to our congregation as well as to a whole host of other people who are readers of my books and other things. And we had 5,184 respondents, and we look to find what's working and what's not working in marriages. You know, what frustrates you? What are you disappointed in? What mm-hmm. do you wish was better? What works really well? What do you love? And then in addition to that, we look to correlate that to other information like, relative satisfaction in a couple's marriage, how much time they spent in communicating with each other, how much time they spent intimacy every week, how often they take a date, do they go to church together, do they pray together?
Yeah.
And out of that, we ended up with a great body of information that told us that, you know, marriage is hard work, but it's also, there's also hope, and that it's possible to make this thing work in a way that blesses both husband and wife and makes a difference in the world. So the book is really aimed at helping couples to remember some very basic things we tend to forget when we're married, to give them some tips and some tools that will help them improve the quality of their marriage, and in the process to make them laugh in a few places, to make them cry in a few places, and to inspire them to have a love that will actually stay for their lifetime.
In your pastoral counseling through the years and in this survey that you did, you must have kept seeing some of the same comments and remarks and situations come up.
Oh, absolutely. But people tend to, you know, most folks think that they're alone in the places that they're at. Like, for instance, a lot of people who are in their 30s with children find that their marriage is struggling.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody talks about it, and so they think they're the only ones, and they don't really know this is normal. And so part of what I've tried to say is, look, if you're struggling, you know, you have children and you're struggling, welcome to the club. That means you're normal. This is what happens in this stage of your family life. And or fighting, you know, people think, well, we fight all the time. It must be something wrong with us. Well, mm-hmm. no, everybody fights, you know, and we actually have the statistical data that tells, you know, how often people fight, you know, and by fighting, I don't mean just a little spat, but I mean, you know, they're really upset with each other.
Yeah.
And the average is about one time a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we find that almost everybody gets bored with their intimate life sometimes. It's one of the top five things people fight over.
Yeah.
And you know, men tend to have a higher libido than women do. And so, you know, all of these things we kind of know, we have statistical information to say, yep, that's right, you're normal. It's
mm-hmm.
okay. You know, and if you leave this spouse and you go get another one, you're going to struggle with the same thing all over again because this is normal. This is how it works. But there's also, you know, the hopeful message that there's some basic and simple things you can do that can make it better, that can strengthen your marriage, that can help you have a dynamic, loving relationship that will last for a lifetime.
I was interested in, right at the beginning of your book, how that you actually are suggesting that you dig around and find your wedding vows and reference them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, a lot of times most couples, I doubt, even have their wedding vows
mm-hmm.
left, but, you know, you can find them in the front of a hymnal of, you know, if your particular church has a hymnal with the wedding service in it. But to go back and to look to see, what did I promise in this? And what I find is that a lot of people get married. They get married because they're in love and this is what you're supposed to do, without any clear idea as to what the mission is. And usually a good set of wedding vows will describe what the mission is in marriage,
mm-hmm.
to love and to cherish until we are parted by death, this kind of language,
yeah.
which all points back to this idea, especially in the book of Genesis chapter 2, where you read that God saw the man and it was not good for the man to be alone. He would make for him a helper as his companion. And that describes for us a picture of the mission of marriage. We're meant to be helpers for each other, and we're meant to be companions. And so, you know, if we're clear about that, then we start thinking, well, what does it mean to help my wife? What does it mean to be her companion? What does it mean to help my husband? And somewhere in there is the idea of blessing. We were blessed to be a blessing, so I'm meant to bless her. I'm meant to encourage her. I'm meant to understand what her needs are, and I can't meet all of those needs, but I can certainly help her find joy in life. I can help her when she's struggling. I can help her be the woman that God wants her to be. And so if we understand the calling of marriage is not always to feel madly in love, we won't. Every couple is going to fall out of love somewhere during their life, probably multiple times. And then they're going to recover that love again, hopefully, you know, as they persistently do certain things. But we are called to always love, to practice agape, to bless, encourage, build up, lift up, care for, and be a companion to that other person. And so going back and looking at your wedding vows, you go, oh, yeah, I kind of forgot that's what it was all about.
Sure. The foundation. What she wants, what he wants is chapter 2. And you have here on one of the pages, someone must have said to you, it's almost as if we speak different languages.
Right, right. Well, and, you know, you think back to the John Gray books, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. And we do seem to speak different languages, you know, and on a regular basis, my wife and I have, you know, spats every week, not serious, just little conversations where she says something and it means one thing to me, but it meant something else to her. And it's clear that we are thinking differently. And I noticed that with my daughters, that my daughters and my wife tend to mean the same thing by the same vocabulary, but I mean something different by that vocabulary. And so learning how to speak each other's languages and part of that's also learning, you know, each other's love languages, the Chapman idea that you figure out, you know, what is it that constitutes a blessing to LaVon? That's my wife. What is it that acts as a blessing? And I'll give you an example. Several years ago, you know, this is my second book on marriage, and yet I still am figuring stuff out.
Yeah.
Several years ago, I LaVon's computer was old and dated, and it was running slow, and I thought, okay, for our anniversary, I'm going to get her, I think it was our anniversary, maybe her birthday, I'm going to get her a brand new computer. I got her this computer. I stayed up all night long getting it set up with her pictures and just perfect. I was up till like 3 a.m. trying to get this thing ready for her. I give it to her as her present, and she looked at it, and I could tell she was on the verge of tears. And she was like, this is really sweet that you did this. I'm not complaining, but you're the one who loves technology, not me. Why would you think that this would be, you know, I know you're willing to bless me, but like, I have other things that I really like. How did you miss that? You know, and of course, I was defensive and got my feelings hurt, you know, at first. And then it's like, she's right. How did I miss that? You know, how did I buy for her what I would have wanted as opposed to what would have blessed her? And so we do speak these different languages on a regular basis.
And this also enters into the next chapter, which is on sexual intimacy, speaking, misunderstanding, that sort of thing. One of the sections here, it says sexual intimacy in the Bible. I can remember in the 70s, just one of my graduate professors wrote a book called God Invented Sex, and that really kind of shocked some people because they had forgotten that.
Right. And you know, even when I preached the sermon that chapter was built on, there were people who were unnerved that we would talk about sex
in front of God and everybody. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And, you know, on Christian radio, there are people who are like, oh, you shouldn't mention the S word, you know, when you're... But this is a huge part of our lives. And when you read the Genesis story, you know, you find that God made them male and female, and that they were naked and they were not ashamed. And right there in Genesis chapter 2, you find the man and the woman embrace and they become one flesh. And so there's this beauty to sexual intimacy. It was God's idea. It was and it's designed physiologically. We know it produces hormonal responses in the midst of this that are meant to cement us together or bind us together. But the challenge is, you know, because we don't talk about this in the church, we don't teach people about it, then we leave it to society to teach people about sexual intimacy. And unfortunately, what society often offers us is a poor imitation of the real thing. And so they offer us the physiology of it, but without the meaning of it. And, you know, in the Bible, the euphemism for intimacy in the Old Testament was to know.
Yes.
So Adam knew his wife, and they had a child. But I love that idea that what this means is to know somebody you know, you both know one another emotionally, but now you know one another physically. You are bearing yourself. You are becoming naked or vulnerable before another human being, and that's supposed to be something with meaning and not something that's just a, you know, casual and a kind of hooking up thing that people talk about today. But in addition to that, what we find is that couples, even, you know, Christian couples who understand that, struggle with the area of sexuality. It's one of the top five issues that people fight about. And part of this is that we have different expectations, and sometimes unrealistic expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes, you know, a lot of people just reported after 20 years of marriage, this is boring. You know,
yeah.
we're and so somewhere, you know, in the chapter we talk a little bit about how do you reclaim excitement in this, and how do you come to share, because hardly ever do couples have similar needs in this area. There's always a high need and a lower need partner, mm-hmm. in the relationship. Usually the male high need, but not always. And so you have to learn to dance together. When LaVon and I got married, we were just out of high school. And I had this idea in my mind that when people were married, they were intimate every night of the week.
Right.
I mean, I'm
yep.
exaggerating a little, but not, mm-hmm. not much. That was my hope anyway.
Yeah.
And my wife, LaVon felt like, well, once a month when the moon is out,
right.
maybe couples are intimate. Well, we had such a radically different set of expectations that we had to figure out. You know, certainly mine wasn't right,
mm-hmm.
hers wasn't right, but somewhere we needed to learn to dance together.
Hmm.
And the other thing we find, and I list this in the book, is that a lot of, especially whoever the high-need partner is, but typically the male, has the assumption that everybody else out there is more intimate more
right.
frequently than they are. And yet when you look at the data, you find it doesn't really work that way. You know, and most people, when I shared this data, they were like, really? I'm surprised, you know, and that was kind of helpful for them to think about this. And so anyway, there's some other really, that's one of my favorite chapters, because there's some really great insights that came from the surveys, but also some, you know, just nuts and bolts things that we can do to improve this part of our lives. And when we do, almost everything else improves. So if you improve communications, intimacy improves, but also if you improve intimacy, communication tends to improve. It's kind of an interesting chicken and egg.
One of the chapters is called Habits That Hurt and Habits That Heal. What are some of these things that we fall into that really begin to degrade marriage or distract it?
Yeah. So what we looked for is, what are the things that are toxic? And we had a number of folks who took the survey who were divorced, and we asked them, what led to your divorce? What were the key factors? There are three that I mentioned in particular. One is emotional or physical abuse.
Mm-hmm.
That when we start hurting the other human being, the other person, first of all, we've lost sight of the mission. The mission was to bless them and to encourage them and to build them up. And it's okay to fight and have conflict, but in our fighting or conflict, when we're tearing at the soul of the other person, we're saying harmful things to them, or we're controlling them, or, you know, or certainly physically abused. That's clear. But even in these other areas, we've already forsaken the mission. And when people feel when people are afraid, or when mm-hmm. they're hurt and they're emotionally damaged in their relationship, what it feels like is, it feels like a life sentence to prison. And what I've suggested is that was not what God intended for marriage. God did not intend marriage to be a life sentence of being, you know, made to feel small and humiliated and hurt. And so somewhere in there, you've got to get help. You know, and it often will take a counselor to help, or it will take somebody who is focused on addressing these kind of issues, and some marriages don't survive that. But it's possible if both partners are willing to work at it, there is hope there. And the second thing was on addictions, drugs and alcohol, also pornography.
Mm-hmm. You know,
any of these things can be addictive behaviors that ultimately lead us to become slaves to the thing that was supposed to promise us pleasure. And when that happens, we no longer live in a healthy relationship. And so when we looked at the causes for divorce, a significant number of those had to do with addictions, where the person had become enslaved to something, couldn't let go of it, wouldn't seek help for it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the great thing is, there is help. There's help available, but you've got to be willing to say, I think I need some help. And I suggest in the book, if your spouse tells you that you might have a drinking problem, you probably
yeah.
do. You know, it's, and most of us don't want to admit, well, I have a problem, but the first step in fixing things is to say, I think I need some help.
Yeah.
And the last thing is just adultery. It's infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens, there's the physical infidelity, but there's also the emotional infidelity. That's the sort of breaking of boundaries. It starts, you know, in conversations that we have and feelings that come up. And it's not it's not unusual for human beings to have feelings towards somebody who's not their mate. You work closely with somebody, every once in a while there'll be a little spark, and especially if things aren't healthy at home, or if you know, you spend more time with somebody in the workplace, the key is to recognize that in yourself and to go, okay, this is a warning sign, and now I need to address that. And so we try to talk, in the book, I try to talk about how you deal with temptation, how you deal with, with those moments in which you find yourself drawn into or potentially drawn in a different direction.
I've noticed recently a number of situations where on Facebook or some of the other technological ways to communicate, people all of a sudden they start interacting online with maybe someone they dated in high school.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they end up at a high school reunion, and then what?
Yeah, that's a huge issue. It used to be that most affairs started in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Today, increasingly, affairs are starting online, and they're starting exactly as you described it on Facebook, when people are reconnecting with old friends, and there seems to be a safety that you're not looking the person in the face, and so you say things, you can begin talking about what happened in the good old days, and then you
right.
begin talking about your relationship, and you talk about, well, you know, I remember how much I loved you, and
mm-hmm.
or, you know, how I felt about you, and all of a sudden these feelings come back, just like you're in junior high, you know,
yeah.
you start finding yourself, your heart beating a little faster, somebody's, you know, was excited about you, and because of the fact that you're not face-to-face,
mm-hmm.
you're saying things you wouldn't say, and one of the things I suggest is when it comes to online relationships, if you feel like you have to close your computer if your spouse walks in,
yeah.
or if you're, you know, you have to erase things because you're afraid you wouldn't want them to see it, you have passwords that, you know, so they can't see these things, that's a warning sign right there. And in my own life, you know, I've given LaVon, she has all of my passwords,
mm-hmm.
so look, you can look at anything I have, because I'm not going to say something on Facebook that I wouldn't want you to read.
Yeah.
I'm not going to text somebody or email something. And every so often, even as a pastor, people will, happens on Facebook a lot, people will send me a note, and in a personal message, they'll say something, and I feel this little strange vibe about it. And they may
right.
not have meant anything by it, but you can kind of tell, hey, this could go the wrong way, and so I need to be careful how I, you know, how I respond
mm-hmm.
so that this person doesn't feel like I'm encouraging this. And so that's just being smart, you
yeah.
know. It's really important. That's part of what we talk about in the book.
Again, I'm talking with Pastor Adam Hamilton. His book is called Love to Stay, Sex, Grace, and Commitment. Explain to our listeners how that at the end of every chapter you put in something called Reflect and Engage.
Right. So what we wanted people to do was, you know, especially if a couple would read this together, you know, read it separately, but come together to talk about it, to give them some exercises to actually practice what we talk about in each chapter. So there's also a DVD that goes with this if people are interested. It's designed for small group studies or use, but it can also be used by couples. It's got like 10 minutes in which I'm teaching, and then there's a leader's guide. But at the end of each chapter, there is this reflection opportunity, and with little exercises that are designed to really help people test out what they just learned and try it out. And, you know, the thing that I love about this and the things that we've included in the book is, again, it's not rocket science. It's not things that are impossible for us to do. And I think a lot of times we guys in particular, you know, if our spouse isn't happy, we feel really discouraged by that. We, you know, we want to be a good mate. We want to be good husbands, but we don't always know how. And then, you know, if they suggest we see a counselor or get some help or read a book, we feel like, well, we're a failure. And we kind of get it. You know, at counselors, we get a deer in the headlights. Like, we don't really understand what we're doing wrong. We struggle with that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to write this book from the perspective of a guy and for men. It's for men and women both. But, I mean, I wanted to make sure that the men, when they would read it, would go, hey, I can do that. You know, like one of the really simple things in the book, this is just one of dozens of these kind of simple ideas, but the women, one of the top five things they said is they felt unappreciated.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what I've suggested is what would happen if every week you wrote a personal thank you note to your wife. It can be a text someday. It could be an email. But ideally, it's a little handwritten note, maybe on a post-it note or a piece of stationery that just says, I wanted you to know I really appreciate you. I noticed this thing that you did yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and it made me feel this way. Or I noticed that you do this all the time, and I never stop to say thank you. And don't wait until Valentine's Day to do it. Everybody
right.
expects it then. But if you're weekly saying, I really appreciate you, that will significantly impact your relationship. And that's a small little thing that costs next to nothing to do and takes less than 5 minutes, but can have a really big impact on your relationship. And again, that's just one of many examples.
In the end of your book, you have a couple of appendices. Explain that.
Yeah. So in the appendices, part of it is giving more of the statistical information from the surveys. So we give charts and graphs and show, here's what we learned from the 5,184 in areas related to what makes me feel loved, what makes me feel close to my mate, conflict in marriage, and a number of others. But my favorite appendix is Appendix B. And in there, we looked for there were 100 married people who took the survey that we did that mm-hmm. had been married more than 50 years.
I see.
And we thought, okay, these people have actually had a love that stayed. It lasted for a lifetime. So what can we learn from them? And I summarized some of this earlier in the book, but in this chapter, I just put almost every, you know, we had an open-ended question, and I put almost every open-ended answer that they gave on what it takes to make love last for a lifetime.
Uh-huh.
And it was beautiful. There are things like, you know, kiss her every night before you go to bed.
Uh-huh.
You know, one person said, well, you know, by the time we've been married this long, I wouldn't change anything about him because I finally got him just about
yes.
the way I like him.
You know? Very good.
And so, yeah, there's just a lot of those kind of touching and endearing comments that, and you know, the number one response senior adults gave to what it takes to make love last a lifetime is perseverance. And it points to the fact that they'll be the first ones to tell you it's hard work sometimes. And there'll be troughs and, you know, valleys in your marriage. That happens in every marriage. Don't give up. Hang in there. Keep working at it. And then practice these kind of simple things we talk about in here. You know, the thank yous, one of the suggestions we have is the importance of saying I'm sorry on a regular basis. There's taking each other out on dates. What we find is after people get married, they stop dating.
Yeah.
And the average person in our survey only went out on a date 6 times a year or less with their spouse.
Mm-hmm.
But couples who dated once a month or more had much higher ratios of happiness in marriage.
Hmm. The book by Pastor Adam Hamilton is called Love to Stay, Sex, Grace, and Commitment. Where can our listeners get a hold of this book?
Yeah, it's available at bookstores nationwide right now. It's also available at Amazon. And if you go on Amazon, there's a free download that you can make of it's a sampler. It's got little bits of the various chapters. But
mm-hmm.
The book's available at the local Christian bookstore, at Barnes & Noble. If they don't have it, they can order it. And they can get more information at my website, adamhamilton.org. So just adamhamilton, all one word, .org. And I'm posting excerpts from the book right now, so they can go online and read about that. They can find out about other resellers of the book and more about, you know, the other books that I've written.
Adam, thanks so much for being with us today on LifeQuest.
It was a joy to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net or write to LifeQuest at P.O. Box 33082, Knoxville, Tennessee, 37930. I'm Dwight Lainhoff. Thank you.